Hello, cows! Well, you know what? I'm not sure I'm going to call you guys cows anymore. Maybe I'm going to call you the inmates. The inmates of the asylum. You are married, Stuck. You are one with the institution. And, you know, honestly, I feel for you. I feel for you more than I think you'll ever know. As being a person who tries to tread very lightly in the institutions, I bid you greetings. And I hope everything works fine. If you're married to schools, you can't think of any other way to live. You are an institutionalized inmate. I used to work for a prison. Sometimes people who work in prison, we talk about, you know, well, we're going to prison, we're going to go do this and do this. And we have to explain to people that we're not actually inmates, we just work there. And we talk about the inside and things like that. There was always some concern about the recidivism level, how many times people come back to prison once they get out, and how everybody's concerned about that. We've got to take care of this recidivism level, but you have to understand the whole point of institutions is that you kind of become dependent on it. The people on the inside, you know what? They never have to worry about food. They never have to worry about clothes. They never have to worry about anything. Every single penny that they make, like in our prisons, you know, people go, oh, it's so horrible. They only make like 35 cents an hour. And you go, well, let's be honest. Everything's taken care of for them. They don't have to spend any of their money on anything if they don't want to. They don't even have to work unless they really, really want to. Or unless they find a way to get away from it. And that 35 cents, you know, that's 35 cents an hour. That adds up pretty fast. And that's money those guys can use to buy stuff at the commissary. You know, junk food, paper, whatever, you know. They get free paper. They get free postage for mailing stuff out. They get access to excellent law libraries. They get access to just excellent libraries, period. I'm not saying that being in prison is a luxury hotel. I'm not saying that at all. It really is prison. You're stuck there and there's not much you can do. But everything that you get, by and large, you get for free. It doesn't cost you anything. And you grow kind of dependent on that every single penny that you get is yours. It's not taxed, and you can blow it on whatever you want that's available. Of course, your options are pretty limited, but you can do it. And it breeds this kind of institutional thing so that when these guys get out, they can't really deal with reality, because they've been so accustomed to just having everything they basically need. They're gonna get fed. They're gonna get clothed. You know, their clothes get washed on a regular basis. They're not allowed to get disgusting and dirty. They can take as many showers as they like, and the water's always hot. You know, there's a lot of things that they don't have to face with. They have cable television. They even got to the point to where they can have an individual television in their individual cell that they share with another person. But they've gotten to the point where they can have a little portable TV, and they can take that portable TV and they can watch whatever they like with it off a cable. They can't have, you know, DVDs or videotapes or anything like that. You know, there's a certain amount of having to make sure that they don't have things that they can render into weapons. And that's tricky, and that's hard, and it makes life a little more difficult for everybody. But that's just an extreme version of institutional thought. there's no way you can escape the institution because you've grown dependent on it. It's like my wife and electricity. It's like almost everybody and forced air heating. You know, we all depend on it. We demand that our environment inside of our house is in the 70s. You know, and within a pretty small range of maybe only 2 or 3 or 4 degrees. And we get pretty pissy if it's not that way. And you know what? That's slavery to the institution. You have to pay for the privilege of being able to have gas that comes on and comes off at any given moment to be able to let you have that kind of an environment. So anyway, yeah, you know, if you guys were stuck in an environment where there were temperature fluctuations that went up and down, now my family does because we only heat somewhat. We don't heat to a particular temperature and strive to keep it there. We only heat to the point to where it's healthful, you know, which is like 65 or something like that. Much lower than most people would think is good, maybe even down to 60. And there's zones in our house. We have a cold zone, we have a hot zone. The kids upstairs broil, you know, it's up 75, 80 because you can't really pump that hot air back down. I'm working on that, though. I'm working on a system to make that happen. And that's why my house is really bad. It was really designed for forced air zones, you know. Sometimes the heater comes on in this area, but most of the time it comes on just in this area. You know, it almost ignores the fact that heat rises, you know. It's not even built to take advantage of that. It just figures that you do use a fan to pump air in, you heat it up with gas, and you throw it out everywhere. And it doesn't even take into account that there's laws of physics particularly. It mostly ignores them. Where if they just would have thought a little bit and given a little bit of consideration to just the way the fact that heat rises, you would only put vents for the heating down way down low. And that way the low air would get warm, but it would rise and, you know, and that would work really good. But no, nobody ever thinks about that. You want to have a heater blowing. You want to be able to feel hot air blowing, and that's an institutional thing. We want evidence. We want to be able to put our hand up against something and feel hot air blowing in. And that's the only way you can ever feel like it's really working. Why? Because we don't think anymore. As in general, as a society, we have divorced ourselves from thinking about things. We don't give any thought to it. We never think about what's good or what's right particularly. We're constantly in just comfort mode. How are we going to feel the most comfortable? We really are drawn to things that make allow us to sit on our butts longer and longer and longer in a given day. But that's basically it. It's that institutional thought we have. It's all like we're in prison and everything's taken care of for us. You can think of any of the kind of dystopias that were brought up in books, literature, film, whatever. And one of the big things about them is that there is a whole system that's controlled by people who know much more than you do. And if they die and things start breaking down, well, you just have to learn how to live without them somehow. Or whatever. Or you always have a high priest of the people that know how to fix these things, and they're your leaders, and you do whatever they ask you to do, because if you don't, you're dead. You're dead. I'm one of those people now. You know, I used to be a computer hobbyist back when nobody had computers. You just had them for fun. It was like kind of the amateur radio hobby. It was a computer hobby. You'd buy all the parts, and you'd put it together, and you'd program your own computer, and you'd have fun with it. Now, computers run everything to the point to where people wouldn't know how to function without the computers. And now, all of a sudden, I'm a high priest. I'm a person that it doesn't matter how much money you have to pay me. you're going to pay me that much money and I'm going to control your life, and that's the way it's going to be. So, that's okay. It's going to keep me in good money for the rest of my life until somebody figures out something different than computers. But you know what? I'm a pretty smart guy. I'll figure those out too. And on the off chance we have any more innovation left in us, I personally think that, by and large, we're starting to run out of our ability to innovate particularly. Most of the new stuff that comes out now isn't an innovation. It is a variation on a theme. You know, most of the little doodads and doohickeys we have now are just new combinations of stuff we already have. We don't have anything that's really genuinely new and incredible. We're finally using some of the things that we've had and putting them together with other things that we already had and coming up with some pretty neat and interesting new combinations. That's what we're doing now. I haven't seen any real innovation in a long, long time. At least stuff that really touches anybody. I used to work for Los Alamos National Lab, and there were some guys that were working on some pretty interesting stuff in there, but I don't think any of that had any application outside of the military complex. And even if that stuff comes to fruition there, is kind of doubtful. It's mostly pie in the sky, sci-fi garbage. And honestly, most of the stuff that we were dreaming up in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, we haven't pulled off. And it isn't necessarily because we don't have the technology to do it. Most technology we have, it's just not something that people want bad enough to get, like rocket ships that can take just people wherever they want to go, or flying cars. Every now and then, it's always fun to see somebody who designs and builds some flying cars and says, we're going to take over the whole world. And you go, it's not going to happen because the government's not going to allow it because it's not safe enough. There was once a time when you could innovate and do amazing things and there was almost nothing holding you back. But those days are gone. We're now heavily regulated. And a whole lot of things that we'd like to do are just now, frankly, illegal. So you just don't do them. And that's another thing about the whole, about our institutional society. Many, many things could happen, but we have too many rules preventing them. There's some way that somebody's going to say, I'm sorry, you can't do that. Why not? Well, because we came up with a law. Our ability to foresee new things on the horizon and preemptively write laws to prevent them from happening is becoming amazing. Our ability to stifle innovation has outstripped our desire to innovate. You know, to protect ourselves from potential danger. We would much rather do that than actually come up with a new everything, new way to transport ourselves, new way to eat, new way to grow food, whatever. We're stuck within some really tight constraints. That's because of institutional society. Our society is institutional. We like the safety and security of the prison we've built for ourselves. We like not having to worry about how this or that works. It just does. We don't mind the fact that we have to go out and make gobs and gobs of money to keep this whole situation going when it was never really necessary to do that. I mean, you know, people can say, well, we want to be like the cavemen, but you know what? The cavemen had some other possibilities. Those guys had a culture. They had a rich culture that we don't have. You know, they used to play songs. They used to make drawings, cave drawings, for Pete's sake. We don't have time for that. We don't have time even for hobbies. I'm always amazed. You go back 50, 60, 70 years, everybody had time for a hobby. You know? You would go out and you'd tinker around in your garage. Do you have time for that anymore? No. Why not? Because you're too busy. You're too busy with all the things that need to get done. The institution has kind of sucked up your life and said, we don't feel like we can trust you with your free time, so we're going to eat it all up. Kids today have far less free time just to do what they wish than they've ever had in the past. Interesting, because of all the conveniences we have. We don't have to spend a ton of time washing clothes. We don't have to spend a ton of time washing dishes. We've got dishwashers now. We don't have to spend a lot of time doing many things. And it just eats our lunches, every single one of us. Anyway, that's what's happening. And I can see it because I've been part of very real, very constraining institutions like prison. I haven't been in prison. I've worked for a prison, but I've seen how it works, seen how it's done. I was part of the infrastructure that met these guys' basic needs. I was in charge of communication. The phone system was my problem. And let me tell you, there was a lot of crap going on with the phone system for inmates because they have to be done a certain way. And it's real evil. It's real nasty. And that's kind of the way phone systems are probably going to be more in the future. It's a little more constraining. Just so people can't, so that people don't hurt themselves. And the funny thing is, you would think that given all these things that we know about institutions, that people would be fighting them. But they don't, for some very simple, basic reasons. Number one reason, I think, is because we depend upon them. We don't know what's dangerous and what's not in our world. So we depend upon our institutions to take care of that. That's why the Food and Drug Administration, for instance, exists. Its job is to make sure that all of our food is healthy and safe. We don't have to look at what we're eating particularly, because most of the possibilities of getting food poisoning or dying from the food supply or having bad whatever, having bad drugs that'll hurt us, they've been taken away. It doesn't happen. And we grow dependent on that. We don't think about it anymore. We don't look at food and say, well, that's rot. You don't have to. Plus, we've encouraged all of our corporations to deal with food, to put in as many preservatives as we can so they last longer, so we don't have to fret about spoilage. That's one of the great things. I remember when the new tomato came out, the new genetically engineered tomato. It was one of the first genetically engineered vegetables that we had. And do you know why it was genetically engineered? It was the sole reason of making it so it would last longer, so it wouldn't spoil. And it was actually done on the cellular, on a genetic cellular level, to make it so that they would last longer, mostly so they could ship it further and further, because we want to be able to have tomatoes any time we want them. So, you know, you don't wait for tomatoes to be in season. You can have tomatoes any time you good and well please. And we've become very institutional about that. We can have a certain vegetable any time of year we like, because we ship them in from ungodly distances to be able to bring them here so that they're fresh here. Stupid. You should only eat food when they're in the season to be eaten, for a couple of reasons, but that's kind of how it works. And you used to eat your meat mostly during winter when there wasn't other food available to you. Now we eat meat constantly, all the time, and tons of it, stuff that we normally would only do during winter particularly. because during the summertime, we would be barraged with vegetables, and that's all we would eat. It's just tons and tons of vegetables, because that, we were trying to get rid of it. It would push out other kinds of food. Interesting, we can't do that anymore because we're institutionalized. Everything that we want is right there, anytime we want it. And we depend upon those. Now it's true. It's true from the beginning of time. You know? You can think of it as, in its lowest point, as just a simple division of labor. You know? How does the world work? You know, I go out and hunt and gather food, and somebody else stays home and takes care of children or cooks or whatever else happens. And you know, that's just the basic thing of society, the division of labor. I think in a degree we've gone too far. We've gone to the point where we're so enslaved by the things, the monster we've created, that I can see that being our downfall. The fact that we just can't do things if, for some reason, one of our key technologies just either stopped working or something horrible happened to it, we would be sunk. We would be absolutely sunk. Look at people's absolute turmoil over oil right now, because the gas prices are so high. And you know what? I don't think it's really tied to anything significant. You know, people can always point at certain events, a certain war, natural disasters that go on, that say, okay, these are the reasons why the price of gas went up. And you go, no, not necessarily. Because honestly, it would be very easy for them to say, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore. And everybody would either go to war with them, or they'd capitulate to them. And we've already got that. We've already got high priests that really can control life. It can control circumstances. It can say, oh, I'm not going to do this if you don't make it worth my while. So, there you go. There's institutional mind. I think that's what we're getting into. So now I'm going to start calling you people. You know, I used to call you guys cows because you used to follow everybody else and sniff their butt. That's still true. But you're also inmates in the asylum. The asylum of our own creation, of our societal institution. There's no other way we can live. And it's time to go now. I think our disc is almost full. I'm Jane Emerald. This is quasi-indefatigable Zenlith. We'll talk about something else later, I think. Look at us on the web at quix.us. You can throw a www in front of it if you really want to, but honestly, it's just kind of silly. You should just kind of enjoy. Anyway, this is Jane Emerald. Thank you for coming. We're glad you're here. And see us next time. Bye!